Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order Monday, April 29th, 2019. 18 minutes after 9 a.m., so we're a little late getting into the end of the session. So we'll try to keep our meeting starting on time, but on occasion there'll be a delay of a few minutes as we work through the logistics. But I've been joined today by my co-chair, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Wilkowski, the other two senators, one Senator Schauer is excused, and Senator Machicki is on the way. We have two items on the agenda today. SB 10, which is Extend Suicide Prevention Council. And the next item for public testimony and committee discussion is Senate Bill 103, the Permanent Fund Dividend Appropriations, which is basically the referred to as the split bill, where we talk about what percentage of the permanent fund run as a under an endowment model would be shared with the between the people and with the dividend and the core needs of the state. So, but first up, we're going to have SB 10, Extend the Suicide Prevention Council. We heard this bill on April 24th, 2019, where we reviewed the audit, we took public testimony, and we reviewed the fiscal note. The office of Senator Von Imhoff, who's in charge of bills, has not received notices or interest of amendments from committee members, and we've had heard no concerns. We've had no other amendments or issues and concerns delivered to the office. So, do we have any further discussion, comments from committee members concerning the Extend Suicide Prevention Council? Senator Wilson, what's the will of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 10, Extend Suicide Council Prevention, Bill 31/LS0255/A from committee with the tax physical notes and committee recommendations.
Okay, we have a motion to move the bill from committee with attached physical notes and members' recommendations or concerns. Do we have any comments? Do we have any objection to moving the bill to the next committee of referral, which is the Rules Committee? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move this bill from committee to the next committee referral. Next up, SB 103. SB 103 is a proposed piece of legislation from the Finance Committee to modify the formula that we use for paying the dividends. And as we have advanced in time, when we started with a portfolio in the permanent fund of half a billion or a little less than that, I think was initially, several decades ago, to now where we're at around $65 billion, there's a significant difference. We had, when the dividend was first put forth into the statutes to pay the public portion of the royalty wealth being accumulated by the state in the sale of the collectively owned oil wealth, that dividend formula was put together. And as time has advanced, and the portfolio has substantially increased, as referenced up to about $65 billion, it would be difficult to imagine the a dividend formulation put together on a $65 billion portfolio that would be the same as a one that's $500 million. So as we've advanced and our oil volumes has declined as the as the mother of all oil fields in Alaska, Prudhoe Bay, has started approaching the bottom of the parabolic curve on production, which means it's come off a huge peak, it's declined, and now it's a long, flat tail of 2 or 3% decline rate for probably decades. And we don't have the reoccurring revenue that we've had in the past. And we've had, now we're faced with a difficult task and solution requirements of trying to have a discussion, public input, and then modify the formula. It's in the best interest of the legislature, and I think pretty much all of the elected officials, I would think, would want a compilation of a dividend that is followed every year, very robotically, so everybody knows what it is. So we have in before the committee a bill that would split the amount that's going to be paid out of the portfolio on a 5-year average. So you look back 6 years and take five of the last 6 years, and we do that little 1-year glitch in order to have the amount calculated well in advance of the governor putting forward a recommended budget in December. So the numerics of the amount coming to the state would be known probably around September in a very to a very high degree, if not nearly to the dollar. And also using the 5-year look back gives us a lot of smoothing, gets away from the high years when you have strong portfolio advances in the equity markets due to economic expansions or severe contractions due to recessions or, God forbid, a depression. It stabilizes the revenue stream. It also does not require the permanent fund to substantially in any way alter their management style of the permanent fund and or push them to chase returns or to give them any other real need for modifications in putting forward the policy. So that brings us back to the basically the 5% split, which is the next year, this current year is going to be 5.25% before it's ratcheted down to 5%, but we need to share that with the public needs to help share that with the state so we can meet our core obligations. And what we're talking about there is our need and constitutional requirement to educate our kids, maintain our schools, run a public safety program, incarcerate, unfortunately, some of our Alaskans that need to be incarcerated for the safety of the others. We need to be able to run our basic government services throughout the state. So we have, in this bill, have a split of one half to each, one half to the dividends, one half to the state. So that's kind of the general layout of what's before the committee. And we are going to now proceed into public hearing portion. We'll take some comments. We'll come back for a discussion, I think, on the fiscal note. And then we will set this bill aside for further review. That will give the members of the committee ample time to contemplate the magnitude of the decision in front of us. This is a decision that we're struggling with that is well beyond a 1-year budget cycle. This is going to affect future generations of Alaskans in, frankly, perpetuity, well after we're gone and our great grandkids will be hopefully still looking over the portfolio wealth created by this current generation. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and open up the public hearing. So we'll go ahead and start the public hearing portion. We're going to go to the off-net. And we're going to start with Adam Hikes out of Homer. You can introduce yourself for the record, speak to the bill.
Good morning. My name is Adam Hypes from Homer, Alaska. I am in opposition to this bill, and considering the comments I heard you speak just a moment prior, some of you may drastically overestimate the role of government in meeting the needs of the people. I don't think that's something any amount of money can ever achieve. People need to take care of themselves. There's specific wording in this bill that I find highly troubling. I'd like to direct your attention to Section 3, Subsection B. The added words legislature may appropriate and takes out the words corporation shall transfer. That is highly troubling to me because I do not believe it is the role of the legislature at all to appropriate funds to the permanent fund dividend. I might be missing some of the details here, but the word appropriate puts control in the hands of the legislation, and that is in stark contrast to what the people voted for when they voted for Michael Dunleavy for governor. I would be cautious that this is not in defiance of the will of the people. We've made it very clear that the legislature does not have permission to take, tax, or modify the permanent fund dividend formula. And that is all I have to say.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today. Next up, Lynette Clark from...
Hello.
If you can introduce yourself for the record, please, and who you represent and speak to the bill.
This is Lynette Clark. I live in Fox, Alaska. And as an Alaskan, I'm representing myself. I have followed this bill since it was introduced. I think both you, Chair Stedman, and Co-Chair Von Inhoff, are in absolute violation of your oath of office. When this bill was introduced, all I saw was to, first of all, download all of the copies, 15 pages worth, of the Senate Bill 103, the Senate Finance Committee's sponsor statement, and the chart of all the stuff of how good this is for you to do for us. This is kind of service is what the bull gives the cow. You are outside of your limits for the type of representation you're trying to bring to this bill. I am absolutely opposed to this being passed. The permanent fund dividend, through a series of votes, came into being. And that being was it was completely supported. I think it was a 73% vote of being able to, as a shareholder in the permanent fund corporation, to be able to receive royalties off of non-renewable resources that were taken from us at statehood during our statehood compact. I just absolutely disagree with any of your paws being on or near what you're trying to accomplish with this bill. I recommend that this committee sit back, take your hands off of the money that belongs to the shareholders of the people of Alaska, and stop this nonsense. You are out of bounds, you are wrong, and you are violating your oath of office to represent us in a forum that complies with our wishes. Those wishes are that we receive a full payment on the existing formula of the permanent fund dividend to be paid as royalty to the citizens, man, woman, and child of the state of Alaska. I'm completely opposed to this, and I think you're way outside of your boundaries. It's another scam or shell game or smoke and mirrors to be able for you to pad more money for bigger government, and that is not what the people were asking for when we elected Mike Dunleavy as governor of this state. I think you need to get in line to not only his budget, but to the requirements. You're going to be facing a big red pen here shortly, and if you don't come into compliance with what our wishes are, you're going to be out of office 2020. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony.
No payment on the existing formula of the permanent fund dividend to be paid as...
Ready to go? Okay. Come back on the record. We had a little snafu there with technology, but we got. So we have another sign up here. We'll go to Eagle River. Chris Enchenlob, if you can introduce yourself, Chris, and with the correct pronunciation of your name, and I'm sorry.
My name's Chris Enchenlob, for the record, from calling from Eagle River. Yeah, I'm opposed to SB 103, and any manipulation, you know, we're spending a lot of time on this dividend thing, and it shouldn't even be in place. I'm in full support of Governor Dunleavy's putting this thing in the Constitution, so, you know, it's just, it's not an easy button. Y'all think it's the easy button. It's not, you know. There's other ways to go about this besides taking it from the people. You know, this is a tax. You know, when you're fooling around with the permanent fund dividend, it's a tax, you know, and it's not the transparent way to do business. You know, we do business with a lot of the countries, and they see, you know, what we've done with the oil companies. We keep changing the tax on them, you know, to benefit whatever the state needs, a couple bucks, so they want to change the, you know, the formulas of how they, you know, tax people or get revenue. And I don't know. I look around the room there. I see Pete Kelly's not with us any longer and kind of scoffed at us when we didn't want SB 26 passed. And I'm telling you, the people are not online with what you guys are trying to do here, and we're online with Governor Dunleavy's plan, and do it at your peril. Thank you for taking my testimony.
Okay, thank you, Chris, for calling in today. That concludes our... Okay, we have one more coming in. Do we have anybody in the audience who wants to come forward and speak on this bill? Anybody in the audience? Seeing none, that's fine. We'll go now back to the off-net. Go up to Antioch. Herman Morgan, please.
Yeah, good morning. You know, we're all watching you guys reacting to the comments on TV. We could see you live, and I'm concerned about you guys are not following the governor's budget. And Lyman and Donnie, you guys are living from areas for the poorest people of Alaska, and yet you want to take away their permanent fund, and it seems like you guys are. You guys have another branch of government in there. It's called a university, and they're asking for more and more money in education, and yet our scores are lowest in the nation, and yet the UAA, they lost their accreditation in teaching. You guys need to reset your priorities. We all saw you guys laugh at the governor's budget that give us back our permanent fund. Instead, you guys listen to David Teal. You continue using that budget and take away last year's permanent fund, you're going to make the state go bankrupt. You know, it's sad to see what's going on. I don't know what's driving you guys, especially you, Natasha, we saw you almost palm your fist on the table and say, we want their permanent budget, we want it now. What is driving you guys? Work with the governor. Use his budget. Don't follow this bad advice. It'll bring people out of recession, the Alaska out of recession, encourage the private economy. We don't need more money in big government. You know, it's really sad to see what's going on. Like, you guys don't even represent them. You represent the god of big government. And it's sad to see what you guys are doing. It's really sad, man. And people won't even know, can't even comment right now. They don't know. Some people don't know. You guys are hurting Alaska. You're almost destroying Alaska. I sent a message to David Wilson. I asked him, please bring up if the state is still giving these... refugees, 3,000 a month stipends. And I ask him, how much is that costing? And it's not fair to be doing things like that, giving our money to foreigners and yet taking away our permanent fund. If you take away permanent fund, a lot of these kids can't go to college. They're putting their money away for college, and yet you're taking that opportunity away. You guys are listening to too much to University of Alaska. They shouldn't be the fourth branch of our government. They don't belong there. You guys are hurting the state, especially you, Donnie Olson. We see you laughing. Think about those people who need that permanent fund instead of big government. I'm going to stop talking, but you guys are making a wrong decision. You're following David Teal's budget, workers' own budget, and it hurt to see you guys laugh at Governor Dummy's budget. You guys actually laughed at that. You guys say, how can he predict the future? And yet you guys listen to David T. predicting the future. That's so awful. You guys are a disgrace. You guys are doing what's right for Alaskans. Stop listening to UAA and all the money they're asking for. You know what? You know, this education, they want more money. And yet,
Herman,
they're teaching transgenderism to our kids instead of teaching math, science, and the basics. They're getting to social engineering, and they're into our government right now, and it's sad. You guys, pick up your people, fellow Alaskans. Stop doing this. Bye.
Herman, okay, thank you for your testimony, Herman. Now we'll go to Anchorage, Rose Hubbard, please. Rose Hubbard, if you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and speak to the bill and try to keep your comments fairly succinct, please.
Yes, my name is Rose Hubbard, and I am representing a private citizen myself. I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. I think that there is a right and wrong way to approach the PFD, and I think that just cutting it without having Alaska and Alaskans to take the time to have their say is the wrong way. It feels like you're just stealing our money when it's not really our money. The PFD was was designed as an incentive. And it is not a right that we have, but because we have lived in such a privileged state to have the PFD, a lot of Alaskans feel that it is a right for us. No other state provides a permanent fund, so I think that a lot of this can be resolved by going about this in the appropriate manner, taking the time to let Alaskans see and hear the reasons behind cutting the PFD, rather than just saying, hey, we're taking this away for whatever reason. However well-mannered and well-reasoned the budget is cut, it leaves a bad taste in the mouth of Alaskans.
Okay, thank you, Rose, for your testimony. Next up, Catherine Felt from Kenai.
Hi, this is Catherine Felt from Kenai. I currently oppose Senate Bill 103. For the reasons being that it's not a constitutional amendment. I'm a pro-PFD constituent, and I actually think a 50-50 split is a good compromise, but I would not back any change to the current PFD formula without making a deal with the people of Alaska and placing this 50-50 split in the Constitution to be protected for future generations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Catherine. And we'll go to Kodiak, Deborah Kirk. We'll have a brief at ease. come back on the record. I appreciate the patience from the committee and the public. I wanted to give the public a little more time in case somebody was dashing to the LIO or having problems with the telephone communication, but we do have a new sign up in the room, Vicki Jo Kennedy. She can come forward, introduce herself for the record, and speak to the bill, please.
Yeah, good morning, Vicki Jo Kennedy. My home is Kodiak Island, but I've been here in Juneau for 18 months. Yeah, I was one of those people trying to get in here. All right, so you guys have been working really, really hard on these, but I think keeping the permanent fund safe is a question indeed. And my one thing I found in here was you're going to treat it like the permanent fund is treated. Well, if you treat it the same way it was treated the last 3 years, that don't sound very good. So I'm not sure. I just walked in the door, picked it up. But I'm glad you're taking public testimony one more time on the PFD because it indeed does belong to the people until that changes. And I don't know when that's going to happen, but just try to protect it as much as you can. I listened to everything, even though I was out a couple of days last week. The $12 million that you want, or billion, excuse me, with a B, you want to put in, I think it'll be a lot safer if you do lock it up. You know, just don't let it be like our so-called federal Social Security lockbox because we see how well that's working. But just try to do all you can to keep it safe. You guys can appropriate money out of other things, cut the budget, do what you got to do, but don't cut it so bad we're going to run all the good people out of this state. Because I guarantee you, I was in Seattle 2 months ago. They're lining up to get up here. Yeah, I guarantee it. I saw it with my own eyes. Free money, free Medicare. Permanent fund, they're going to dissolve it. If you live there, you're going to get a great big chunk of money. Every time the state starts talking about this PFD, we have to go through the same ritual. Everybody thinks they own it. Everybody's going to get $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. But just do what you can to protect it. We'd sure appreciate it. And thank you for working so hard. I have been paying attention. I do attend and I do listen. Thank you.
Thanks, Vicki, for your testimony. And that we have nobody else signed up, so I don't see anybody else in the audience, in the off-net LIO, so we'll now close public testimony on SB 103. We're going to delay the reading of the fiscal note to a future meeting. We have any final comments, concerns from committee members before we set this bill aside? Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. I just wanted to point out that I appreciate that the committee is considering a statute change for the calculation of the dividend. We've moved from annual earnings to a total value, a market value of the fund, and the dividend calculation should reflect that. I just wanted to point out for the committee that a 50-50 split based on the budget that the Senate, the operating budget that the Senate has now with a very, very modest capital budget yields out about $700 million in surplus. And in order to pay a 50-50 dividend, it's going to cost the state, we will need to take about, it's an $861 million draw somewhere to pay for it, because it's about a $2,300 dividend. And the three accounts that we have are the earnings reserve account, and just like our previous speaker asked us to protect the permanent fund, that will be an unstructured draw outside the POMV, and what that means is that future POMV draws will be less because we'll be taking $861 million from it. Our other option is the CBR, the Constitutional Budget Reserve. We have money there to afford it, that is true. But keep in mind that we've been taking several tens of millions of dollars from it recently for earthquakes. We have a high probability of forest fires, especially with beetle kill this year in South Central. It's like a tinderbox, and I worry about that. And our other fund is the PCE fund. We have about $1 billion in there, so we have money there. But the consequence of that is very less money for rural energy assistance. So I'm just going to point out the consequences of that, and the committee members then can decide how they want to move forward with that information. So thank you.
Other comments from committee members before we set this bill aside for further examination, review, and discussion and potential amendments from committee members? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and set this bill aside. We are going, this will conclude the work this morning. We are scheduled to reconvene at 1:30. Reconvene, so we'll be adjourning this morning's meeting. Any other comments before we adjourn for this morning? Thank everybody for being patient on the late start. We'll try to start on time. On occasions, we will be have some delays between now and the session as we try to balance everything and work forward in an orderly manner and an orderly closeout. We are adjourned. Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order Monday, April 29th, 1:30, 7 or 8 p.m. This is the second meeting today. With me today is my co-chair, Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Bishop, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Wilikowski. We have a quorum to conduct business. We have one item on the agenda, Senate Bill 104, the appropriation limit bill that we've been working on here in concept. We'll continue that today. We're going to have a CS put on the table. We're going to talk about it a little bit, and then we're going to have a public hearing and see what comes out of that. So we will go ahead and start by having a motion to adopt a CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 104, version 31-LS0804/U before the committee as our working document.
I will go ahead and object for discussions. Ms. Lucky, could you come forward, please? And for those watching at home, she is the lead staff, finance staff person dealing with legislation for the Finance Committee, working out of Senator Von Imhoff's office. Ms. Lucky, you want to introduce yourself for the record and talk about this CS, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Julie Lucky, and staff to the Senate Finance Committee, working under Senator Von Imhoff. Today you have the CS/U, and I do apologize for the lateness of distribution. There was a technical error that we were hoping to have fixed in a new CS. It did not arrive in time, and I will point out that technical error as I go through the changes. In the new CS, there was a new section added related to an allowance outside the cap for capital projects, and you'll see that on page 2, starting on line 12 and going through line 17. And as the committee will remember, the bill does set a spending cap. What this would allow is an amount equal to 5% of that cap to be spent outside of the cap for capital projects within a year. The erroneous language you'll see on page 2, lines 16 through 17, talks about ensuring that the capital improvements are not included in the calculation of the cap. Since this cap is actually based on a particular number, that language is not needed and will be removed in a future CS. The first year of the spending limit, which would be $5 billion, the amount available, or, not available, the amount allowable would be up to $250 million to be outside the cap. As the committee, we'll see when the capital budget comes in, the capital budget does not mean that the capital budget will be $250 million. That just means that up to $250 million would not be included under the cap. There were also a couple of technical corrections that are made to two sections of the bill. They do not change the intent of the bill. The spending cap is increased by the cumulative change in inflation, and this is just to clarify that each year the inflation would be cumulative. That was unclear in the previous CS, and that language you will see on page 1, line 13, through page 2, line 2. There were also some questions the committee had regarding what debt means, and after consultation with some other agency staff, we clarified that language, and you'll see that on page 2, lines 5 through 7, and 19 through 20. I'm sorry, that'd be lines 6 through 7, and 19 through 20. And so the language now reads, it's required to pay debt obligations of the state, including general obligation and revenue bonds, and further goes on to define debt obligation as not including a state pension liability or an appropriation for school bond debt reimbursement. And just to clarify, since this is exceptions, that means the cap would include the state pension liability? Would not include the state pension liability. And that concludes the changes in the CS.
Okay, I'll go ahead and remove my objection to the adoption of the CS. Do we have further objection to the adoption of the CS? Seeing and hearing none, we have adopted you as our working document before us. Ms. Lucky, you have a couple of slides you want to show us, or you want to talk about this a little bit?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to go over the fiscal note very quickly, and then Caroline Schultz from our office will actually go over the slides. I just wanted to point out the fiscal note should be in members' packets, and it is a zero fiscal note, and it would cover all agencies.
Thank you. And could you try to slide over towards the center of the table? It makes it easier for everybody to see. You could introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and then help us with this bill. I think you have some slides that you want to show us.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Caroline Schultz, and I am staff to the committee, and I work in Senator von Imhoff's office. I have prepared two handouts that members should have in front of them. They are labeled in pen A and B. They look very similar for folks who have them in front of them or folks who are watching at home. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to show a short-term cash flow analysis that will, let me zoom in on that a bit, that will show our expected budget given the budget that we passed out of committee last week, as well as some of the other policy considerations in front of the committee right now.
Carolyn, this is the 50-51. Is that the one you want to start off with?
No. All right. So, if members could please turn their attention to the slide labeled A, and it's the slide that I have in front of everybody. So I'm just going to walk down and show line by line what we have here. If you start on top, and I just want to clarify that this reflects unrestricted general fund spending, and the numbers are in millions with the exception of the line M, which shows the per capita permanent fund dividend. So if we start on the top in the revenue section, line A represents the oil and other UGF revenue. You can see in fiscal year 20, it's about $2.3 billion. That's from the Department of Revenue spring forecast. And then line B shows the SB 26% of market value draw, which will be 5.25%. until fiscal year 22 when it switches to 5%. And then you can see line C shows the total unrestricted general fund revenue, which is the sum of lines A and B, for a total of $5.23 billion in fiscal year 20. Then we go down to the spending section. You can see starting in line D is agency operations. That starts with $3.785 billion, and that's from the Senate budget that we moved out of committee on Friday. And then looking into the out years, I have that growing at a 1.5% inflation rate. I know that the rate of budget inflation is a subject for discussion in front of the committee that we've touched on, but for the purposes of modeling this, we decided to use the lower 1.5% number. Line E shows total debt payments, and this comes from the Department of Revenue debt affordability book. And then line F clarifies the debt subject to the cap, like my colleague Ms. Lucky articulated. The bill explicitly clarifies that only debt that is considered debt issued by the state, general bond, general obligation bond, and revenue bonds are subject to, or are excluded from the cap. Things like school debt reimbursement and then our pension obligation would still be counted under the cap. You can see, like I said, the line G shows our retirement payment or on behalf payment. And then line H is for fund capitalizations. We've just held that steady through the 3 years shown here, just because of uncertainty as to what fund capitalizations will end up being. That gives the total operating budget in line I for $4.3 billion. And then line J shows the placeholder capital budget of $150 million. Line I and line J together reflect the total government UGF spending of $4.46 billion. And here on this chart A that you have in front of you, this is where these two show a difference. This reflects a permanent fund dividend that we're just the surplus, which would be our total UGF revenue, subtracted our UGF spending, which in fiscal year 2020 shows $777 million. And that calculates to about a $1,200 permanent fund dividend for all qualified applicants. The other chart in front of us shows the 50% POMV split. So moving down, that shows our total expenditures, which includes our dividend and line N, 5.237. billion. Of course, our deficit definitionally would be zero because we have essentially used the surplus to pay the dividend in this model. This is where we get now into where it would, the cap would be taking effect. Appropriation subject to the cap, I want to clarify, you can look in the notes, which it's the total UGF spending less the debt that we outlined in line F, as well as capital. And like my colleague Ms. Lucky articulated, capital is excluded from the debt as long as it is less than 5% of what the cap allows. So if a $5 billion cap has essentially $250 million of capital that you're allowed to spend that doesn't count toward the cap. So in FY20, the cap doesn't apply because the effective date for the bill that you have in front of you is for the fiscal year 21 budget. But you can see in fiscal year 21, based on the modeling that we've shown, the appropriations subject to the cap are $82 million over the $5 billion cap. Just for some reference, we also show the constitutional budget reserve estimated beginning of year balance for 2021 and 22. We have a pretty good estimate that the CBR balance in the beginning of FY20 that's subject to appropriation is about $2.3 billion, but that, of course, is subject to change depending on exactly where revenue comes in for the current fiscal year. I'll stop if members have any questions on this.
We have any questions from committee members? So how would we address line R when you got a red negative $82 million?
Mr. Chairman, it suggests that the cap as is written in Senate Bill 104 perhaps is lower than we can expect is achievable in the first year.
So then we'd either have to have more revenue or less expenses, or just less expenses because it's delinked from revenue?
Mr. Chairman, the cap is delinked from revenue, so even if we had a significant windfall in terms of oil prices or production or remarkably large market returns on the permanent fund, it wouldn't matter because our cap would still be set at $5 billion. So that would be distinct from the cash flow issue, and it would just still be a cap at $5 billion.
So what are the component parts that are driving this negative number when we have pretty much flat operating budgets other than adjusted for inflation?
Mr. Chairman, your operating budget does grow slowly, but it's important to note that our debt payments are expected to increase in fiscal year 21 and 22. It's also a considerable driving factor to note that our expected retirement payment should go up by between 100 and 125 million between fiscal year 20 and 21 based on the experience study that we've discussed a few times here at the table, that relates to expected returns for the PERS and TERS liability and the demographic changes that the Farm Board is now taking into account.
So just for clarity, so then that would push us under the cap or over the cap depending on actuarial assumptions and performance of the retirement portfolio?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yes, that's absolutely correct.
Okay, Senator Von Imhoff.
So you did point out the key piece of information is line G as in George. The retirement is going up in fiscal year 21 and 22. And that pushes against the cap. If we, what you can see here is lines A through O. On the far right, it says cash flow, and then you have cap on the bottom lines, line P, Q, R. And they are separate but interrelated. The cap is, we have to look at our cap, and that's why we're kind of testing it out right now to see what we should be doing realistically with our anticipated expenses the next few years. The agency line D looks to be pretty steady. It's the other state services like debt, retirement, and even capital that makes a significant impact on our cap because those go up more than retirement and debt can go up more than inflation. So Ms. Schultz is correct. We either have to adjust the amount of our cap or put more money aside to help fund the years where we are, well, it's the cash flow thing. So, yeah, we have to look and see whether our cap is at the right amount.
Okay. Any further questions? Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Ms. Schultz, on page 2 of the bill, it says the appropriation limit in A of this section does not apply to the appropriation to the principal of the permit fund. Okay, that's a given. Required to pay debt obligations of the state, including general obligation bonds and revenue bonds. So E, on our spreadsheet here, A, the document we're working off of, total debt payments, it goes up. Is that inside the cap or outside the cap?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, the line E for total debt payments includes the state obligation for state debt, state general obligation and revenue bonds, as well as school and municipal debt reimbursement.
Mm-hmm.
And then line F, that is subtracts out our school bond debt reimbursement because that in the bill is specifically excluded from the debt that is excluded from the cap. I apologize, I made that really confusing.
So the 103 is outside the cap?
That is correct, through the chair, that's
thank
correct.
Thank you, thank you.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so I understand this correctly, this appropriation limit does not apply to an appropriation to the principal of the permanent fund, but it would apply to the actual appropriation for the permanent fund dividend. Am I understanding that correctly?
Through the chair, Senator Bilikowski, that's correct.
Okay. And if I follow up, Mr. So there, the Constitution, that Article 9, Section 16, excludes appropriations for permanent fund dividends. So if there were a conflict between the Constitution and the statute, the Constitution's going to trump, right?
Senator von Imhoff, you want to help with that question?
So Senator Wilkowski is correct, but there's this entire statute is a conflict, Senator. The rate by which we're doing is a conflict. The starting amount is a conflict. What's underneath and what's not underneath is a conflict, and our capital amount is a conflict. So it's a conflict all the way around.
So let's just for those watching at home, hopefully there's a few people watching and they're concerned about this. We currently have a constitutional spending cap on the books. I think that's what Senator Wilkowski was referring to. And within the context of that spending cap that's on the books, there's a starting point and a growth rate every year. It's considerably higher than where we're at today and higher than, frankly, where we've been at for a long time. So to bring a statutory spending cap numeric below what the constitutional spending cap is basically dictating to us leads to a lot of, differences between our statutory spending cap and the Constitution that Senator Wilkowski correctly infers trumps statute. Does that help at all, Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, and I guess I'm just wondering what ramifications there would be if we had a statute on the books that set an appropriation limit and that was different than the Constitution. It seems to me the Constitution would overrule that and the statute would be rendered meaningless. Am I understanding that correctly?
I'm not a lawyer. We should get a constitutional lawyer, but I would think Constitution rules, and if we had a statutory spending cap that the legislature was trying to stay in that was lower than the constitutional one, I don't think there'd be a lot of issues with that. I think we're trying to eventually get the constitutional spending cap adjusted so it's actually more viable. to the current financial circumstances over the last two decades, because it's been way above our expenditures for a long time. I think ever since I've been in the Senate. Other comments or
go ahead. Just on the FY20 calculation for the dividend, the committee just recently passed a dividend of $3,000, and I'm just curious how that impacts the FY20 calculations.
You could help Senator Wilikowski with that.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. I don't have a spreadsheet with the statutory PFD available right at this moment, but that is certainly something that I can provide for the committee.
Great.
If we switch to the second spreadsheet that I handed out, that'll get us a little closer to the full statutory dividend amount because it reflects the 50% POMV split. So I'll go ahead and pull that up.
Well, I think on your original slide, slide A, you have a per capita dividend here, FY20, of $1,215. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And the statutory is somewhere around $3,000. So we're looking at $1.8 billion. And if we had $1.8 billion, does that affect this spending cap numeric? And by how much would that $1.8 billion affect it if it does?
Mr. Chairman, the increasing the dividend payout, so the total dividend appropriation was about $1.9 billion, wouldn't affect the cap itself. It would impact the appropriation subject to the cap by adding an additional $900 million, roughly more than that, $1.2 billion. It's important to note the difference between the cash flow constraints and the cap constraints when we're discussing any kind of expenditure, whether it's the dividend or the operating budget or the capital budget.
Senator Machicki, I have a question.
Well, just in this case, they're one and the same. Isn't that correct? You couldn't spend over the cap on a full dividend because you'd be over your cap by $800 million, perhaps.
Through the chair, that's correct. The full statutory dividend would put us significantly over the cap.
Maybe we could have you put the full statutory dividend in the sheet for the committee members and run it so we have clear numbers on that would be beneficial.
Certainly, Mr.
And then we can go on to slide B. I think if there's no other questions on slide A, and just as a prefix of the slide earlier today, we were talking about changing the statutory dividend calculation to a split of the entire 5.25% or 5%, depending on FY22, 50-50 between the dividend, individual dividend, and then the portion that would come to the state for core services. So that is what this slide is. Is that correct? And then you want to take us through that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, the slide that's labeled B in members' packets and that is up on the overhead here shows everything that we looked at in the prior slide, with the exception that line L for the PFD calculation now reflects a 50% of POMV split that goes to the dividend, and then the other 50% would then go to other government spending. So lines A through K are unchanged in this model, the first part of this still being revenue and the second part being spending on government services for operating and capital. And then, like I said, line L is where we change to the 50% of POMV dividend payment. You can see that line M, the per capita PFD payment, is higher. Line N, which is our total expenditures, including the PFD, is also higher. And then, of course, our revenue minus our expenditures reflects a deficit, a much larger deficit, because obviously there is a much higher payment for the permanent fund dividends. And that's important to note that line O is a deficit as it relates to our revenue. That's our cash flow deficit, which is distinct from the cap itself, which then the calculation in line P, which is the appropriation subject to the cap, is also higher than the previous slide because the dividend amount is considerably higher. The cap itself in line Q is unchanged on this slide. So members can see that line R, the amount that appropriations are either over or under the cap, is much larger when we have a larger dividend payout. It's also worth noting that in this model, we did assume that deficits came out of the constitutional budget reserve. So you can see that the constitutional budget reserve balances are depleting much more quickly with the larger dividend payout. So those are the key differences between slide A and slide B.
And then just briefly, so O, line O, means they're red. So in FY20, hypothetically, we'd be $690 million underwater. And next year, $865 million short of meeting our obligations without coming in. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. Our revenue is $690 million less expected in fiscal year 20 than our expenditures would be.
And that's if we split it, the percent of market value, 50-50?
Yes, given the current revenue expectations.
Okay. And then on line R, when the cap is at 5,000, we're underwater $947 million in FY21. So we're over the cap, so we'd have to take almost $1 billion out of operating to make that balance?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. We'd be over the cap by nearly $1 billion in FY21.
So it looks to me like we have a benchmark error on where our starting number is. How would we fix that? So,
Mr. Chairman, we could either figure out a way to reduce the total expenditure by about $1 billion, or we could add $1 billion to the cap.
Okay, so those watching at home, we're kind of between two positions. One of them is the current statutory dividend, which was the first slide A. And we're looking at a cap under that scenario, but we have to keep in mind at the table, if we adopt a new statutory dividend structure, what impact that would have on this spending limit bill. So if we adopt that, we're going to have to come back and adjust this spending limit starting point. Doesn't appear to make a lot of sense not to do that. Senator Von Imhoff.
So you're right on line R. We could, Q and R, increase the cap to reflect anything we want. We can have a $1 billion capital budget and have included. We can have a full statutory, current statutory PFD. We can do whatever we want with the cap. But it's the cash flow, line O, that matters. And the whole reason why we have a cap is to constrain ourselves. So when we have years of high cash flow, we don't spend it all. We save some of it. So when there's years of low cash flow, we can utilize the CBR. So this is one hand, kind of an academic experience. We can do the cap whatever we want. And there are some reasons to actually push the cap up, like retirement or debt. Those are real expenses that we have to pay. But we don't have to spend up to the cap if we don't want to. We can save some of that cash flow. And I just want to point out that it's, don't look at the cap as we have to spend to it or that we should spend to it, because if we don't have the revenue, we have to take it from somewhere. And it's either the CBR or the Power Cost Equalization Fund or the Earnings Reserve Account. So the default, which I look at number A, has a dividend of about $1,200 for this year. But as you can see, there's pressure on that dividend even just in the next couple of years because of retirement and debt. And that keeps a really, really skinny capital account. Our capital right now we don't have any money for ports in Nome. We only have a few hundred miles of roads that we're doing. We don't have any new projects. Unleashing entrepreneurism with this capital project's not that much. And so it's just a trade-off. I think that Senator Stedman pointed it out. It's line G with our retirement, line J with our capital that's really skinny, and then how we do what we do with our surplus, line L. And I think that's just a decision that not only this table, but our entire caucus just needs to make a decision. And then we have the very bottom, Ms. Schultz put on the CBR. We have about $2.5 billion in there. We just spent another $20 million on earthquake supplemental. And what if we have a really down year in oil prices? So I'm just pointing it out that I really appreciate you making these two spreadsheets because it showed with the 50-50, which is what we talked about this morning, there are impacts to that. And if we do the 50-50, we will be taking almost $1 billion for fiscal year 2020. Well, we'll have to take it for 2020 as well as, or 690 for 2020, 865 million in 2021, another 929 million in 2022. And the CBR at the end of fiscal year 22, just three short years from today, will have less than $300 million in it.
So it's pointed out by my co-chair, we have got to balance the spending cap and then also keep our eye on the net cash flow, which we've been struggling with all winter long in here. And that's not to say that if we went to a split mechanism where when we restructure the dividend formula, we don't have some form of a phase in over a period of a few years to get there versus a cliff approach, which is what this spreadsheet shows. And that's a balance that the legislature has to have a discussion and decide what we want to do. But I think there's would be great concern taking the constitutional budget reserve, which is our main savings account, when we start dropping that number significantly below $2 billion, I think there's some cash flow concerns of just the operations, the month-by-month operational position of the state. So I just want the people at home not to conclude that the CBR sits there and there it doesn't act as a shock absorber to the operating budget, because it does for cash flow purposes throughout the year. We had a question each from Senator Olson and Senator Wilikowski.
I didn't have a question, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to agree with Senator Von Imhoff that just because we have a spending cap doesn't mean we have to spend to that amount, or that we even should spend close to that amount. But the premise that the idea that we should kind of use all that money up so we could do whatever we want to do is kind of out of the realm of reality. And I totally agree with what she's saying.
Senator Wilikowski.
I'm just curious what the rationale is for defining debt obligation and excluding that from the spending cap, appropriation cap, but not including state pension liability or school debt bond reimbursement, but including everything else, like refundable oil tax credits. What's the rationale there?
If we could, Senator Von Imhoff, could you help a little bit with what your thoughts were when you were recommending that the committee consider some of these items for inclusion or exclusion?
So we were looking at what the existing constitutional provision has there now, and it excludes debt. We could easily exclude retirement if that's the wish of the committee. You are right in regards to when you refer to oil tax credits, or anything of that matter, anything in how I look at it that uses UGF, unrestricted general funds. That was my initial proposal, was anything under UGF, but I received feedback from committee members that didn't want to do that. So we started taking a few things out of the cap, including debt, as well as this new CSS 5% of capital. If this committee wishes to take other things out of the cap, that is up to the committee.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, different question on inflation. And it looks like inflation is calculated based on a five-year, previous five fiscal years average. And it seems to me that as inflation is going up or down, you would probably need to react pretty quickly. If we're in a deflationary period, you'd probably be in a situation where you're over allowing for more appropriations. And if you're in an inflationary period, costs are rising, you want to probably be able to react more quickly. I'm just curious what the rationale is for having the five-year previous year average.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Senator Wilikowski, we modeled many different growth options for the cap, and we included population, either a split between population and CPI or inflation. We looked at using Alaska gross domestic product less mining to account for the fact that that's really a volatile aspect of Alaska's gross domestic product calculation. We looked at personal income and a number of other factors, and given the fact that inflation really over the last two decades has been fairly steady, it most recently was the most steady and the most reasonable and then also closest to our revenue forecasts as far as any kind of growth rate was concerned. But I'm sure that that's a subject that this committee could discuss further.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, for the record, Julie Lucky, staff to Senate Finance Committee. As Senator Olson had previously stated, one of the things that we're looking at for the policy was to create a steady growth over time. And since it is not necessarily a spend to target, but a rate of acceptable growth, this was seen as the most steady and predictable when the economists and the people that know the numbers had modeled all of the different growth and CPI indices.
Senator Majicki had a question.
Well, I support the five-year trailing average for Anchorage CPI. I mean, it's the real cost of doing business in Alaska. And if you were to respond to 1 year without an average, you're not only going to get very unstable, but 1 year anomaly is still calculated in the 5 year. If you're going to try to respond to a 1 year in a 1 year period of time, all you're going to do is move up fairly quickly, but you really don't have a way of adjusting down to that average over time. So if you think about that, if that anomaly becomes the norm, it starts becoming calculated in. But if you try to chase it around on actual inflation, you don't do that in the real life. In real life, you don't do it in the business world, and you shouldn't do it in government.
Okay. Have other questions on the Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah, on the constitutional provision of appropriation limit, it talks about it. Well, it sets the limit, and then it says at least one third shall be reserved for capital projects and loan appropriations. And I'm just curious, what is your understanding of what that means? Does that mean that if we have a $5 billion budget, you have to have 1.6, 1.7 billion for capital projects and loan appropriations?
Do you want some help on answering that later? That issue has come up numerous times over the years. Our appropriation limit is so much higher. We've had Ledge Finance calculate that a few times. Several years ago, we had a discussion with then Governor, at the time, Parnell, on the balance of the capital budget versus the operating budget. I recognize what you're putting on the table, Senator Wilikowski, that one-third issue, but it's more complex than what it looks like, and frankly, it's been irrelevant for years. And that helped lead to the concern that some of us have been alluding to at the table is, you know, how do we embed the capital project needs of the state into a spending limit that's really targeted for the growth of the operating budget, but also keep a lid on two larger capital budgets. So these two ladies aren't really the folks to answer that. I'd suggest you go to, we send that question over to Legal and Legislative Finance and let them go in circles, because that's what Senator Hoffman and myself were working this issue several years ago. That's basically what it was. Have other questions, concerns, comments? Let's go to the public hearing portion. Then you have a quick question there.
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chairman. As were the last two, Senator Wilkowski's comments and your comments, and I mean, we've all seen it. Mr. Teal has presented the slides over time. Agency growth hasn't really. Is it really running amok? It's just when we get in these down years where we go 5, 6, 7, 8 years of zero capital budget and the deferred maintenance doesn't stop, and then when we get some funds and as it's prudently spent, we have an increase in a capital budget. My point is, if we could get on a steady maintenance of expenses for our deferred maintenance and including our hard assets, both in vertical and horizontal, meaning our buildings and our roads, it would be nice. And you could smooth this out, and history shows that. I mean, we look at the numbers on the slides, and it's it would be really, really prudent to once and for all try to come to some kind of an agreement on our capital spend on our deferred maintenance to smooth out the spend over time.
Okay. With that, we're going to go into the public hearing portion. So we'll go ahead and open the public hearing portion. We're going to start with the off-net. Please keep your comments succinct to the piece of legislation at hand here. Would be appreciated. And we're going to start in Homer with Adam Hikes. If you can introduce yourself for the record and who you represent and speak to the bill, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Adam Hikes from Homer, Alaska. Can you all hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay. I thought I knew what I was going to say before I came here, but listening to you all try and talk through the numbers, my heart is breaking for you guys. It just sounds like the numbers aren't adding up. It sounds like you're between a rock and a hard place and then another rock, and I don't have any solutions, but I do know that I have previously said today that the POMV model isn't going to work. It's just going to draw our assets down year by year. Spending more is not the solution. Even this spending cap isn't going to fix things. That's not the role of government, guys. I want to take a weight off your shoulders and tell you that I can provide for myself using that PFD that y'all might want to cap or divide. It's the job of the government to, what does the preamble say, promote the general welfare, not provide for it. And guys, we're spending ourselves broke trying to provide for everyone's needs. We can't do that. We have to spend less. And I know that's going to mean cutting costs, but look at the numbers yourself. And if you've got any better ideas, you're welcome to talk amongst yourselves, but the people of Alaska voted for Dunleavy and for a smaller budget. I know it's going to be hard, but it's going to be harder if we don't do it this year. We're running out of time, guys. I love the job that y'all are doing. I respect you. I pray for you guys every day, but we're running up at the end of the rope, out of rope here. I can't say I support this bill. I support all of you in trying to balance the budget, but honestly, the solution is cutting it, and I really suggest you work with the governor on that one. We here on the ground can take care of ourselves. That's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today. We're now going to go to Lynette Clark in Fox.
Hello.
Hello. If you can introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Lynette Clark. I'm from Fox, Alaska, and representing myself as an Alaskan. the message in this last election was loud and clear, and that is cut the budget. What I see for this bill, and I am absolutely opposed to it, because mainly because it's a house of cards. It's a house of conjuring up. It's a house of figuring out how to take more for bigger government. And it's fallen down around our ears, yours and mine. What I say is what this last election dictates, and that is get behind the governor's budget. Look to where you can cut and quit living in a fantasy world that this bill is. When I hear it spoken that they're including a 50-50 split, that hasn't been decided. There's so many things within this that rears its head that this is a bad bill. And, pardon me, it's bad for Alaskans. I think what you need to do is get back to the cutting board and get out the knife and start making bigger slices. We have to live within our means. And I don't want to sound like I'm preaching to the choir because I only think there's a couple of people on this committee that are listening and paying attention. I think that I sit and watch you on the 360 channel, and I see glum instead of an attitude of let's get together and fix this. That requires cuts. That requires following the governor's budget. The people spoke in 2018. It's time for you to listen and do the job you were elected to do. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Lynette, for your testimony today. That concludes the off-net. We'll jump into the room here. Vicki Jo Kennedy. Okay, Vicki Jo, if you can introduce yourself for the record. Okay, you know, if you could follow the drill, that would be good.
That's trained me, okay. Vicki Jo Kennedy, Kodiak Island, but I'm here in Juneau. There. I brought you an apple. When it's time to act, it's too late to prepare. That says it in a nutshell. Here we go with the PFD again. I already told this to Senator Stedman. But I'm to the point with all this money and all this, like the lady said, smoke and mirrors, shell game, use these cops. Why don't we just, with the PFD, turn it into a personal firearms distribution? We'll take care of the crime at the same time. I'm sick of all this fighting over this money, but protect it or not. I don't know what you're going to do at this point with it. You know, every time I come in, I see more stuff. Now we got, I look at this number, $5 billion. And we can have 5% of that. And I did the math even before the lady did it. I was impressed. I couldn't do it. $250 million. That's a lot of money. But there's a lot of things that need funded. But you're talking about cutting the education. And worst of all, my ferry. How am I going to get home? But 104, 103 this morning, 104 in the afternoon. But all I really want to just reiterate here is, again, is when it's time to act, it's too late to prepare. And that was just a little shaker over there in the mat suit. We might get something real like they did in 64. I wasn't here, but I saw the pictures. For God's sakes, you know, just do the right thing and quit making it so complicated where we, the people, the public, yes, and I am a member of the Grandma Brigade, we're real and we're here. We're trying to pay attention. We're trying to give our input. We're trying to help, but we definitely need people that will listen to the public. There's a lot of good advice out there. That lady from Fox, I knew her Fox is. I've actually been there. I might move over there. Just thank you for taking public testimony. I don't think the word's getting out enough, even in the Senate information pamphlets that I pick up every day when I come in. It didn't say in there was public testimony being taken on 103 this morning or 104 this afternoon. It's important the public has got to be informed. You know, I don't do computers, so I have to read it. So that's important to us. And Senator Stedman, Chair, we appreciate because you do remember us on a regular basis, we the people. And the governor's right. We've got to start cutting this budget. you know, not to the point where we're going to bleed out, because that's what I see. I see a hemorrhage. I see the statue in Vietnam of the three soldiers, and the nurse is holding one. He's bleeding out. That's what's happening to this state. And I heard the beeper. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, Vicki.
And here, you can have the apple.
Okay. Apple a day keeps the governor away. Sometimes I have to have two, depending on the governor. But anyway, that concludes public testimony. Is there anybody? I don't think there's anybody else in the room waiting to testify. There's nobody on the list here calling in. So we'll go ahead and close public testimony on the bill, come back to the committee. If we have any comments, concerns, anything, before we're going to set this bill aside and allow the committee members to think about it, maybe make recommendations for alterations, changes, or clarity of what they'd like to see. We have Senator Von Imhoff. You have any?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Stedman. I was just talking about the amount, like why we chose $5 billion was in line with what we expected the next few years' revenue, and then what the last few years' expenditures were, and there were about $5 billion. And when you look at line K in either example, line K shows us the stated about between 4.46 or 4.65 billion. So we are technically, with all the expenditures, below the spending cap. It is only when we utilize the surplus and spend the surplus on anything, whether it's dividends or capital or pay down retirement, whatever we want, that's when we begin to go above the cap, is how I read this. So total government spending line K is actually where we're actually spending.
Okay. Thank you. So, Senator Michiki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It was interesting during public testimony. We began this conversation last year, Senate Bill 196. And this year it was kind of kicked off by the governor. I don't know if folks are forgetting that or not, but this isn't that far. The exclusions are a little different. If you graph out the governor's spending limit and the one we put in judiciary, and as well as here the five-year trailing, he did a three-year average spend. So the last 3 years, you take an average of those 3 years. And then his was very tight. It allowed zero growth, which would have been an eternity of cutting, which is simply impossible over time. This one is tied to true inflation, but smooths it over a five-year average. I think for the folks that called in, the folks listening, this isn't a lot different than the governor's bill. It's different in a couple of ways. We've tried to deal with some very specific likely challenges going forward. But the governor obviously supports a spending appropriation limit. We've supported an appropriation limit for 2 years at this table. What an appropriation limit does doesn't really help us right now, but it's a seed for the future, because we're going to find ourselves back in this situation if we don't control our spending going forward once we hit a baseline. So anyone calling that's not in support of a spending limit, I would love to share some information with them about how much money we spent that we would have been much more useful right now in savings had we had something like this in place 10 years ago or 15 years ago. It's a responsible conservative philosophy that we sort of look at what we must spend and then have a trend for what we're allowed to spend in the future, or history is going to repeat itself.
Okay. We have other comments before we set the bill aside for further review? Okay, seeing none, we're going to go ahead and set this bill aside for further review. That will conclude today's meeting. Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., we'll have a hearing, Senate Bill 91. Nyakuk River Hydroelectric Site, is that correct pronunciation?
Close, Mr. Chairman.
Well, can you help the chairman so I pronounce it right and don't embarrass myself any more than necessary in public? Senator Hoffman?
I'll have it for you tomorrow. I don't have it in front of me here.
Okay, well, I won't have you pronounce it then. Yes. Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., Senator Hoffman is going to present that bill. Is that correct?
I think it was presented. We can go over the highlights again.
Right.
Mr. Chairman.
Right.
Thank you.
And we'll go over it again for the public tomorrow. 9 a.m., see everybody bright and early with a smiley face. We are adjourned.